we see failure as a drug inside it, right, in the office, because when we're mapping anything out, we don't put what success looks like, we put what failure looks like, and then we go the opposite way by reverse engineering the whole process and the whole business model to make sure that we just conquer.
Welcome to the Entrepreneur Experiment Podcast with me, Gary Fox. This is the podcast that discusses the secrets and systems world-class founders use to build their business, their body, and their brain. Today, we have the money special. We have Richie Collins coming in to talk to us about the Wealth Summit, a brand new initiative he's building right here in Ireland for founders and entrepreneurs. Quick caveat though, all the topics discussed here today are not to be seen as financial advice. This is merely for entertainment purposes only. Here's my chat with Richie Collins, but first, quick thank you to my partners. I've got a massive ambition for this podcast. I want to make this the number one business podcast in the world. If I'm going to do that, I've got to be world-class on every single level. And that includes having a world-class studio, which I now have at Iconic Offices, The Green Room. It's an incredible space. I first recorded here with my live pod back in June, and I loved it. And get this, it's publicly bookable. That means you can go online and book it right now. As I said, it's called The Green Room. It's a private cinema and screening room. That means it's perfect to wow a client with a pitch, host a private screening, or do what I do, record a podcast here. So, as I record here, and as you know, I'm a member of Iconic Offices, I've got the team at Iconic Offices to hook us up with a number of exclusive complimentary office trials and discounts for my audience for booking this exact space. No catches. Simply go to the web link in the description, grab the offer that works best for you. Thanks, Iconic Offices. The Wealth Summit is on the RDS on November 15th. It's for entrepreneurs, business owners, and those that aspire to be. If you're at the startup, scale-up, or sell-up stage of the entrepreneurial journey, then the Wealth Summit is for you. Learn how to build personal and business balance sheets through business growth strategies and build out critical paths to financial independence. Join Stephen Bartlett, Niall Quinn, Mandy Hickson, Tom Gannon, and 30 other speakers for a day of empowerment, motivation, education, growth, and networking. And we have an exclusive offer for listeners of the pod. For €150 plus VAT, you're going to get a discounted Access All Areas ticket, which also gives you access to the Wealth Tribe lunch, and it gives you a free masterclass on November 16th on how you can actually implement AI into your business. So click the link below to avail of this incredible offer. Richie, welcome to the pod.
Thanks, Gary. Thanks for having me.
We have had many chats. This is the first one we're going to record and release.
Well, look, you have to wait your time, don't you?
Welcome. Richie, what do you do?
We are a wealth management firm called Walfer Private. We're based in Dublin. That's our main business. It's a regulated business. And we have a focus on creating wealth for business owners and entrepreneurs and showing them that critical path to financial independence. That's a day job. The fun job is a new phenomenon that we have called the Wealth Summit. And basically, it's come out of years of us spending time, the UK and the States, looking at how entrepreneurs and business owners interact with each other and how they educate themselves, how they empower themselves and motivate themselves. And we found that there's very little like that in Ireland. So we've worked in the Wealth Summit the last while, even since before COVID, on a smaller scale, to get it to where it is going to. It's not the polished article. It's far from it. A lot done, more to do, as they say. But what it focuses on is offering accountability to business owners in Ireland by having a summit that they can turn up to twice a year. But in between that, having grow camps whereby they can actually scale their business with like-minded people.
Yeah, when you reached out to me and you're like, oh, do you want to come on this? I was like, absolutely. Because there's been such a gap in Ireland for this for years. We're miles behind. Like you say, you go to the US, the UK, we're miles behind it. And literally every single entrepreneur comes in here and talks about like their lack of connection with other entrepreneurs. It would have been much faster if I'd known this. It would have gone much quicker if I'd avoided that. That's why I do the pod, is to show people like there is a big group of entrepreneurs. I always laugh when people go, oh, you'll run out of guests soon. I'm like, you've no idea how many entrepreneurs are in Ireland. Like how many people are out there. So to see people like yourself, you get it. You understand that it's content. People need to be brought together around something. It can't just be like, we're doing a seminar on tax. Yeah. I can't think of anything I'd less like to do, even if it'd be the most beneficial thing you do all year.
100%.
Like I'm sure, like you've seen it. Like you've seen what moves. when did you start exploring this? Like, when did you start going abroad to conferences and what drove that?
15 years ago.
Really?
Just out of, like, my background was, I was an accountant, a very, very bad accountant, so don't fair call me for accountancy.
Fair play to admit you're accountant.
Put it over there, right? never practiced it for long. I worked then for a company, well, the owner of a company not far from here, BDO, and I worked for Antoine Xavier and Dave Simpson in a private wealth management firm called Wealth and Property Solutions, and our model was prime commercial real estate, and we used to buy shopping centres around the world, the Grafton Street types in Oxford Street in London, Berlin, etc. And then that model fell apart, the debt-driven model, just before the global financial crisis. So we were out of it about a year in advance. We'd been in Abu Dhabi and whatnot. What happened was I had a choice. I could go to Australia and sell ice creams with the rest of the world and have the crack, or stay here. I'm a very proud Irish man. So I love Ireland, love my family. So
what age were you at this stage?
So you're giving me age away now.
No, we won't run the numbers on LinkedIn. You were young enough in your career.
No, I was, it would have been 27. Yeah, 26, 27.
That's young. You get to our age, that's very young.
I wish you could buy back time. What happened was, got made redundant from that because obviously it was a debt-driven model at the time. We got out just before all the nonsense of 07. And I had the choice, as I said, to go to Australia or not. So what happened was, look for mentorship, very little of around. Everybody who was that entrepreneur that made the mistakes, that had gone bankrupt, bust, or else blew up in a positive way, they were fighting the banks. So there's no peer-to-peer advice. So off I went, packed the bags, the old credit union loan, the old sob story, and went over to America and seen a lot of what was going on over there from a finance perspective. Came back, did extra finance exams. The beauty about what I was doing with Antoine and the gang was we were helping entrepreneurs invest money. But I always seen that there was a gap. Like, we'd have people, brokers ringing up, like placing the money, or people coming directly, but there was no strategic advice, in my opinion, outside of the big companies, that was given actual valid, impartial advice to clients that wasn't based on a commission model. So like, when you hear the sayings like there's no insurance like the man in insurance, that's 100% true, right? on a commission model. So we basically said, let's disrupt, let's take into account fee-based advice. So through Walford, we took the fee-based price approach, but hadn't a clue how to run a business. And literally,
what did you want to do? You'd gone to the States to try to figure it out, right? You were trying to go into the States to go, right, well, what? There's something there. I'm just trying to figure out what it is. What were you looking for?
Didn't want to be the box bedroom merchant. Started off at that, but when I was younger, I had hyperactivity and ADHD. So it was always like 10X, 10X, 10X. Right, we're going for this.
Right.
And that's where we are today. What I was looking for was just people to learn from. And people that had made the mistakes, people that were made redundant, people that had to bounce mortgage payments. The typical brass neck entrepreneur that basically came from nothing, had nothing, started with nothing, started with minus, because when I bought my first place back in 07, it was kind of the wind was starting to just blow in, recession. So I had to bounce the first mortgage payment. The second one, the mother gave me a loan. And then after that, it was basically sink or swim and make this work. So what we were looking for in the States was just guidance, direction, leadership, and I would say companionship, because of the loneliness. When you're made redundant in an economy where there's nothing happening and nobody wants to tell you how to get back on the cart because you're probably taking business away from them, you really have to learn. So that's why I went over there, went to a couple of different seminars just about entrepreneurism.
What did you go see?
Like, Grant Cardone was only tipping away back then. Like, there was like little workshops that he was involved in. He wasn't the main act. And he's somebody that I credit everything too. Look, I've been on seminars and workshops with Grant directly, and just the whole 10x mentality of big think, big action, emanates in Wealth for Private today, and that's where the Wealth Summit has come to.
Why do we not have that here?
Paddy Irishman mentality, from the aspect that we're a begrudging nation. I love Ireland, as I said, but I just feel like even the social ads that we run, like I won't even comment on the comments that go up about some of the speakers that we have and some of the things that we do. People sitting at home just begrudging, right?
So we've started ramping up TikTok, Instagram, and I'm hiring someone to manage them for me because I do not want to see the toxic stuff. The people, right? The stuff I put out is helpful stuff.
Yeah.
I'm talking to entrepreneurs about building businesses,
and
the comments are toxic.
Oh. Come here, you would have to have thick skin, you know?
Horrible. But like, I don't think people understand.
Yeah.
Like, me and you are sitting here now, you know, you've given me an hour of your time. Ben's here working with us. Three of us are here trying to make something, trying to create something that hopefully tens of thousands of people will listen to. And if like 5 or 10 of them go, that's it, Richie's problem, that's what I have, right, I'm going to do that. So we're only trying to do good things, but you still get absolutely destroyed in 100%. The comments. Like, it's wild.
Daily, like, you know, but you pity these people and you move on.
It's very sad. Yeah. It's very sad that you're like, that's you. Why you spend your day is commenting on people and what they're doing and what they've built.
Yeah.
People I've honored, serious entrepreneurs, like, 100%. They're not reading your comments. Fucking user 7777. They're not sitting at home going, oh no, he doesn't like my shirt.
We have a team that just blocks it all out. Like, so
yeah, you're better off. But yeah, that growth mentality, like, it is coming. Like, we're here having this conversation, so it is coming.
Yeah.
Why is it taking so long? Like, is it a size thing? Is it we don't see it happening a lot, so we can't believe it? What is it?
How do I say? No disrespect to the nation again, but I just think we're a nation of begrudgers and current Twitchers that want to know what everybody's doing to try and better themselves and not actually embrace growth, embrace the mentality of fair play to that latter lady. They've got up and done a bit. So, like, we always say that we're 10 years behind the UK. I'd say we're probably 30 years, to be honest. Like, what's going on over there and in the States, it's just unbelievable. Like, when it comes to educating people on how to create commerce or create business and create employment, there's nothing here on a large scale. And that's why we've come up with the Wealth Summit.
What are you seeing in the States and the UK at the minute? Because back in 2007, you kind of started to see Grant Cardone, you started to see this big, think bigger mentality.
Yeah.
What are you seeing now?
It's
what's out there now?
Everything that you go to, I'm off to Texas in a couple of weeks for a scale-up conference. And literally, that's like, it's my drug going to this stuff because like I'm pumped going over and 10 times pumped coming back. I absolutely love it. So like the whole focus, like where it used to be just about motivation and getting people's bums up off the seats, out of the PlayStations and all that stuff, it's gone from that level 10 years ago to now, like, you need to blow your business up. And everything that we go to is all about the scale up.
Okay, so if people are listening, the kind of trend now is towards scaling up as opposed to
just getting going.
Okay. When you came back in 07, you went to the seminars, came back, What were you trying to do? What were you trying to put together?
I hadn't a clue. I knew I was going to do something, but I didn't know what it was. So like at the time, medical sales was big, but I wasn't in the St. John's Ambulance, so I didn't have a clue how to put on a bandage or a plaster. So I said, we'll scratch that one. I had done the accountancy stuff and I said, well, look, you can't really make accountant sexy, right? So let's try and
You don't give me accountant vibes anyway.
Well, look,
I'll give you that compliment.
Good friends are accountants, won't say anything. They're always last at a bar though. But we... I said I'd love to do something in the finance world, make it professional but funky. So that's even our office, like you've been out in our office,
it's very different.
Yeah, it's a warehouse, if you want to call it. Yeah, good vibes going on in it. And the most thing that we want to do is just add value to people. So when I looked at the medical sales thing, I hadn't a clue, right? Went back to the financial side. I'd done accountancy. I'd worked for Roy Liver back in the day. You might remember them. They used to knock the doors on a Saturday collecting the old premiums.
They were Liverpool sponsors for ages, weren't they?
Potentially, they were based in Liverpool. Yeah. So I'd imagine there was some connection there at some stage. But I was in there doing admin since I was 16. I got summer jobs and then evening jobs there. And I said, so I've done the accountancy, just a bit of the finance stuff. Let's try and explore that because there's going to be people that are going through bankruptcies, people that are going to have debt problems, people that are going to have this. So we wanted to add value. So the key thing for us was adding value and then putting the energy into it. So I started off in the box bedroom and hired somebody and now we're up to 40 to 50.
So what were you doing? You were helping people kind of get through the crisis, through the crash?
Getting through the banks. But then like, that was like, that's all negative stuff and I don't like negativity, right? Absolutely drains you. So we would position ourselves, find people with problems, right? Outsource the debt forgiveness stuff with the banks and all that. It was great for people to get there. But we focus on the positive assets that they had to ring fence it, to protect the wealth, basically ring fence it and make sure that nobody could get it and then have it produce an income passively in the background, regardless of what was going on.
And what was kind of the first time, I always ask people this, like what was the first kind of 0 to 1? Like how did you even start finding people? You seem like a boring salesman, so I'm thinking of this one, the big problem as it usually is to people. Because that's the question that always stumps people.
Went through the phone book at the time, probably the old Motorola at the time, whatever it was, a Nokia 3310 and going through phone numbers. And basically just said, are they in business now? Just took a list of 30 and haven't looked back.
So you were going after business founders. And this is why I wanted to talk to you today, because you look after a lot of business founders. You look after owners and founders and help them kind of invest and manage their money. So what made you go after that niche?
I just love the mindset of entrepreneurs. I just love people that are hyperactive. I love people that are committed and focused. So there's no point in me looking after people that don't share the same passion that I share. So again, we do look after like medical people that aren't entrepreneurs, but they're adding value to people by saving their lives, etc. So we have a like big cohort of professional services, medical people out there. But like my passion is the natural born hustler and the innovator and the disruptor, as you know.
It's kind of who we go after on the pod. That's kind of our demographic. You asked me earlier, it's like, oh, what kind of person are you after? I was like, just proper entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
People who make stuff happen. Mm. You know, we had a friend of yours there, Jeff, in this seat a couple hours ago, like people like him who just had setbacks, had a story, not an easy journey, was going to be pro footballer, didn't happen. Was going to be pro golfer, didn't happen. Now entrepreneur. Yeah. To people who just don't give up. Like one of those setbacks, you know, there's always that lad in the pub, could have been a pro footballer. Yeah. What are you doing now?
I was in England. One of them ones.
One of them ones. Like the world's full of them.
Yeah.
You know, but the world needs to be more full of people like who are like, yeah, that was a setback. That was a setback. That was a setback. But now I'm on the road because I'm building something special. So you've, Walford, but where's the name come from, by the way? That's a very unusual name.
Good time to introduce that. You were talking about Jeff and the football. I'd be a massive football lad. I played high level myself. And I always supported Celtic. So Glasgow Celtic was founded by a monk from Ireland called Brother Walford, Andrew Kearns from Ballymote in Sligo. So when I set this up, I never forget it was back in 07, 08, Walford, and I was sitting there thinking of a name. You know, the CRO thing, you have to put a name down for
something. Because it stumps people. Yeah. People always can't think of anything.
Yeah. People think it sounds posher than it is, okay, let's be honest. But literally what we did was sat down, me and my brother Eddie, and the Celtic crest was just sitting there beside us, and we went, can't call it Celtic Financial. What about Walford? And the private bit kind of was always something that we wanted to call it because we look after private family money, entrepreneurs, etc. So the Walford Project, that was just the merger, and we haven't looked back. And because we're so passionate about Glasgow Celtic, we'll never let it fail.
I kind of love that. Like, it's personal. Yeah. People are always like, oh, it's not business, it's personal. Nah, it's personal. It's always personal.
Yeah.
It's always personal, especially when you start off. 100%. It's personal. It's just you. That's all it is.
Yeah.
You know, it's an embodiment of you.
The night sitting there, like doing the compliance and the admin at like 2 and 3 in the morning after being out advising clients all day before I could afford to take on somebody, you know. And then literally when we got the first office, I'll never forget it, Claire Brennan, one of the ladies that works for us, we were in there Saturdays and Sundays just trying to get some kind of order on the paperwork because it had all been at home at the start, going back 15 years ago. And so again, you remember these things and you're grateful for the people that came on the journey with you.
And how have you grown it, Richie? Because that's not that long ago. You're coming out 07, 08. Like, it's not that long ago. How have you grown it?
Yeah, so we consolidated the client bank in 2012 under Walford. That's when it got its full regulation status. And we've just grown up by niching, right?
So what is regulation status? What is, because you always hear this, like, oh, regulated by, what does that mean?
Yeah, so we're regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland as a wealth management firm, investment intermediary, et cetera. So you have to go through a process, a couple of years it takes, at the time it did anyway, to get regulated, which means that you have the authority under the certain licenses to conduct business, and you have to follow the code. You have to make sure that everything is compliant. You can't act outside the rules, et cetera. We are very precise in what we do, that we don't want to hold client money. I strongly believe that your advisor should never have the temptation or the ability to hold your money. I'm not going to mention other firms that are in our industry, but those firms that did handle money, a lot of them, I'm not going to say all of them, aren't around anymore. That's all we'll say. So like, we're very niche. We're arm's length from everything. We don't touch client money. And that's how we scale the business as well, through trust.
Show me your incentives, I'll show you your outcome.
Yeah.
That's a great phrase. You've seen a lot, right? What are the big fuck-ups you see founders do? Because you do see this a lot. Builds it, blows it. It's almost an inherent. What makes people great makes them also vulnerable to blow it as well.
It's twofold. So we look after entrepreneurs from every arena, right? And it's two fuck-ups that they make. The first thing is they don't scale quick enough, and they don't sell quick enough is the second one. Because they're always waiting for the next best thing. Oh, look, it's valued at 10 million or 20 million. Oh, another couple of years, I'll get someone in there. We'll open up that division, that category. We'll sell for 30. And that's only 2 years, 3 years away. I'm like, fucking take the money off the table and go again. We call it retirement one when you sell your first business, right?
Retirement one.
Yeah, go like for that. It because you're going to go again, right? So take money off the table, create passive income streams off that. And like when you sell your first business, and I'm talking for the like 3 to 10 million market cap, when you sell that, just make sure that you invest the assets appropriately to make sure that you've got passive income coming in that will replace the income that you were earning and the retained earnings of the first business to allow you to invest everything back into the second business through cash flow.
It is interesting, like nearly every entrepreneur is a serial entrepreneur. Every one of them goes 1, 2, 3, 4, and I speak to some of them and they've been enough money for a lifetime.
Yeah.
But they're just like, I'm just really excited about this new thing. I've got this new idea. And you're like, I'm always fascinated by what motivates them. What do you think drives them?
Fear of failure, I think.
Okay. Yeah. The fear is definitely, yeah. I've figured that out in the last kind of 6 months. Definitely fear of stopping, I think, as well.
Yeah.
Because the stop, who am I? So you think fear of failure, and what was the first one?
It's like a drug. We see failure as a drug inside, right? In the office, because when we're mapping Anton out, we don't put what success looks like. We put what failure looks like, and then we go the opposite way.
I like that.
So by reverse engineering the whole process and the whole business model, we're leaving that on the first step and we're going up the side steps, if you want to call it, to make sure that we just conquer.
That's an interesting one, because I asked Jeff about the sports psychology side of things. And I asked him about, you know, how do you not lose focus? And he goes, you can't keep focus all the time. He's like, you have to switch focus, then you have to come on and admit that failure is possible. Look at the water and say, yeah, could put the ball in there, but then put that aside, exactly like what you've said. So it's very interesting to see the parallels. Put that to your side and go, yeah, it could go in the water, but it won't.
Yeah.
Success is landing on the green, a foot from the pin.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting to see those traits come through again and again and again. You can't be ignorant, because there's this misshapen idea of entrepreneurs. They're this crazy risk-taking genius, when in reality, the really good ones aren't.
They
know they're risk averse. After a while, they figure out, going, if I keep betting the farm, one day the farm is going to come up red and I'm going to come up black. So they realize that. So the two things you said there are really pertinent. What are the, let's talk tangibles in terms of what mad decisions do you see founders make? Because you do see kind of like going, oh my God, he had raised it up to 10 million and then he spent X, Y, and Z and this, this, and this. I'm not talking about individual investment mistakes. I'm just talking about like, what mad things do you see? What decisions do they make? You're like, what are they doing? Like, what's the classic thing you see people spend money on that you're like, oh my God.
They'll do an equity raise and then they'll have business too. Like what you said, they're serial entrepreneurs. So once they get the raise in, they feel that they can open the belt a little bit and be a bit more passive on it, rather than just like getting it to where it needs to be before they go for venture two. So I've seen an awful lot of that, where by people focus on venture two while venture one is just being funded, and literally the focus is not there anymore and it brings the two of them down. So that's probably the most common thing, especially since on the back of the global financial crisis, and then everyone was grounded for a few years and into COVID again, we have people that set up multiple businesses that have nothing to do with their core skill set. So they basically see somebody having a go and they go, oh, I'm an entrepreneur, I can do that. Stick to your lane is what I always say to people. And that's what we did with the Wealth Summit. Like, yeah, we've gone into events, but it's like totally, we're passionate about what we do. So like, yeah, we put the right people around us to run the event, but the finance aspect of it is literally, it's our vanilla bread and butter that like we thrive on.
What trends are you seeing kind of emerging out of, like, you get a flavor of all the great businesses that are emerging up because you're meeting these founders day after day after day. What trends are you seeing emerging that you're like, that is a really interesting trend or business?
Let's just AI, obviously, right? But I've seen more and more young entrepreneurs coming through, right? Like, you've had some of the lads on here, right? And the girls. There's more and more young people coming in that aren't waiting to lose a job at 30 and then go, oh, I'm going to have a go at this. Like, I love to see that, right? Because that was me back in the day, right? And that's another reason why the Wealth Summit was established, to give people that network that wasn't available for me, you know, 7 or 8 that mightn't come from that background where there was the nepotism or the guidance there from a business owner parent. I have fantastic parents, great childhood, just didn't have the business background. So it was quite a lonely place, still is today, right? Even 15 years on. So that's where it was. But on the trends of what's happening, I see like big push. We spoke about it there earlier on, the AI stuff, just magic, what's going on in that space.
Because it's hard to figure out the signal from the noise, because there's so much noise. Yeah. Everything's AI, AI this, AI that, and you're kind of going, oh, there's just so much noise that I can't even start to figure it out. Like, what are you specifically seeing that's interesting?
I've seen serial entrepreneurs grow in the last 18 months in that space that are literally like changing the world, how we interact with each other. Like there's a lot of jobs that might be made redundant. I can see accountants in the next number of years becoming just data analysts because the accounts will be automated through payments and whatnot, through payments and cards, etc. They'll just be all profiled back into a category or a nominal code whereby the accountant's job will just be to read the accounts, you know, so that'll all come at point of sale, you know. I can see where I see massive growth, and it's what we're doing at the Wealth Summit, is everybody's talking about AI. Nobody's doing it. Okay, everybody goes, oh, ChatGPT,
that's the problem.
Right? Yeah. It's where it's at. ChatGPT is a fantastic piece of kit. 40 quid get you, they'll just give you an example of the power of it, right? So we used to spend $7,000 a month on content writers in the business. And no disrespect, they could be writing about cinemas, they could be writing about podcasts, they could be writing about elephants and then finance the following week, right? So then, unique ability, that's something that we're passionate about, wasn't writing about finance. So we've replaced that through Implement AI. I'll talk about that in a minute, whereby we've got a $2,000 implementer on a consultancy base that implements our AI, and we're saving $5,000 a month on the P&L, right? That's $60,000 a year. If you multiply that on an exit EBITDA multiplier of 6, that's $360,000 of enterprise value on one line of the P&L in one category.
Mm.
Do you understand?
So I do. When you say implement AI, is that a company that comes in and goes, all right, Richie, you're spending these 10 things, we can definitely remove 5 of them.
So we're bringing in the whole ethos of implement AI into SME businesses in Ireland. Okay, not through Walford or the Wealth Summit, through a partner that we have who's going to speak at the Wealth Summit, Alex Shukla and Piers Linney, who was on the Dragon's Den. So Piers was on the Dragon's Den a couple of years ago, and literally they go in, they do an AI audit of your business, and literally help you scale.
Okay, that's interesting. So that, I think this is the bit that's missing, right, for a lot of people, because you see AI this, AI that, but how does that apply to me? I think that's for a lot of people that they don't understand, going, oh, but I run a manufacturing firm in Mullingar. How does that apply to me? So there's actually companies that are setting up that'll implement it. That's clever. That's smart.
So I've been dealing with the lads for the last while. They're speaking actually on the main platform of the Wealth Summit before Stephen Bartlett, but they will, on day 2 of the event, let's call it, is invite only. And it is, we are having the lads coming over and doing a 5 or 6 hour seminar on how you can actually do this stuff. So like how you can like just link it all together through APIs for like a system flow, process flow that will help you scale. So it's not about, like, I see AI as a massive, massive, massive opportunity for Irish businesses to grow and scale quicker through the 10X mindset, and not as a way to save costs. So like, yes, if you're at the end of your curve and you want to like tidy up the P&L for a quick sale on EBITDA, yeah, that's great. AI can help you that. But if you're in a growth mindset, I would utilize it rather than hiring 30 staff, right? Hard to get. You could probably get away with hiring 7 or 8 with the use of AI.
To implement AI, I think that's really interesting. What traits do you look for in founders when you meet them? What do you look and go, I like him or her because of this and this?
They go against the norm. They're disruptors in what they do. It's 2 fingers up to the system, not in a negative way, in a way that is like, well, we were all told in school that we had to do this, this and this. But like, Pythagoras' theorem never really got me rich. Okay, I'm... Right. So it's people that take that mentality and just go, right, that's what we were brainwashed with for 20 years or whatever it was. Now it's life lessons that we need. And these people, these traits are people that just, we never stop is the mentality. We have it in our office everywhere. We never stop. And that's the mentality that like most of our clients have. Mm. They just go through walls, get to where they need to be.
Look for grafters.
Yeah.
What drives you, Richie?
Success. Not personal success, for my team and to put food on the table for my kids.
It's a pretty good driver.
So I'm not motivated by money in any way, even though I'm in it, right? On a daily basis, like I love putting the hoodie on, the old Celtic shorts, at the weekend and going off the kids. So passionate about making sure their future is cemented the way my mother and father did for me.
A lot of people say that. A lot of people say, you know, money doesn't matter. At what point does it not matter? I think that's the key thing.
When you put food on the table, like, look what's going on in the world. It's once you can get yourself a bag of chips on a Friday night and whatnot, we're all wealthy, okay? Mm-hmm. But when it comes to you having a system and a process and a motivation and determination and resilience in whatever you're doing, and if you trade in that time for money, results and profit, right, we're looking after them people and ourselves, if you want to call it, whereby you need to do something with that money, right? So yes, just getting through life, that's wealth, okay? But when you have a system or process that's scalable and sellable with enough margin, that's when problems arise, because money causes problems.
What do you mean money causes problems?
Family fallouts, intergenerational wealth transfer, tax man. People want more money all the time. They see a business doing well. Just you name it. Like it's the root of all evils.
The family fallouts one's a big one in Ireland.
Oh, the field.
I literally met that joke last week because it is bananas.
Crazy.
Why is that still rooted in our psyche?
Obviously, client confidentiality and all that, but like, we look after some very influential people in Ireland that you'd see in the papers and whatnot, and everything's rosy, but behind, I wouldn't like to be at that Christmas table.
I do hear some stories. I said this to you earlier, you know, sometimes we're chatting here in the pod, and then we'll end the interview, and then they'll have the proper chat with me, and they'll be like, oh, this has happened. And I'm like, I know, I wish you told me that on air, but I understand why you can't. Things are never quite what they seem. And that's why I try to do these pods and do them long form, because it's very important that people have a real understanding of what it takes to build a business like Walford, or build a wealth summit, or build enough to put money on the table. Like, it's not simple. And I think it can be hidden away a lot.
Yeah.
Because people either...
It doesn't matter how many zeros you have. Like, yeah, there's always the begrudging. I'm going back to the begrudging Irish thing. Like, we buy a lot of properties in probate for clients in the retirement accounts, tax-free growth, okay? And literally, with these probate sales, like, we don't get...
What's a probate sale for anyone not familiar?
It's basically where somebody has died and there's a house there that might need to be sold, okay, through the will, etc. So basically where mammy and daddy have died and there's a house left and there's four kids, one's in Australia, one's in Canada, and two are still in Ireland.
And there's just right? No will to sort it out,
yeah,
is it?
Yeah, there could be a will there. Will or no will, let's leave it at that, right, without going too deep on it. Literally, no matter what the value of the house is, if it's a 300 grand house in Crumlin or Talla, or a 3 million house out in Fox Rock, it doesn't matter how many zeros people are out for their pound of flesh. And I don't know, I talk to like peers that I have in America just about like family. Like, we do a lot of intergenerational wealth, so I'd be talking to advisors in other jurisdictions, and they, like, some of the stories that I've seen in Ireland is absolutely horrendous. Talk to the guys in Australia, in America, in the UK, and like, they go, oh yeah, like, it gets tidy up, but there's never that much bitterness. But like, the stuff I've seen over here, like, I won't go into it now because some of it's involved with the guards, but unbelievable. Like, it's just...
I've thought about this a bit because it's cropped up a few times in the pod. Is it because as a country we're relatively new money?
We had nothing.
Like, we forget how relatively recent that is without going into ancient history. Yeah. But like, we're relatively new money as an entire country. Like,
entirely right. So I always say to people, we were always the tenant, never the landlord.
Great way of diplomatically putting it.
800 years of all the stuff that went on. But in simple terms, so when money started becoming available, there was a certain cohort of families in Ireland that had money. And then it kind of branched out. And now you have people who, if you take a normal working class family, there could be one or two people doing well and one or two people that aren't doing as well. And that begrudgingness is like, it's instilled in the veins of the family operation. So when it comes to like a will or anything like that, like the... Oh, I can't believe he's getting that or she's getting that. Like,
it's the scarcity mindset. Job,
got that car. Like, it's like, it's just, I love our country, but
I think we're getting there though. I think there is more self-made people coming through, and I think that will breed that through as more self-made people come along. You can only see it to believe it. I talk about this all the time in the pod. You have to see it to be it. I think that will change as more and more people create wealth for themselves, and they build businesses. And then
I love to see it though. Like, I just see all the time, like, people that you might have seen for a while popping back up, like, where they might have failed and they've come back again. So that resilience, the fighting Irish stuff is 100% there, and I love to see it. And I just can't wait for the next 10, 20 years, and maybe when our kids are like in their 30s and 40s seeing it, and like, hopefully that abundance mindset will be there.
I think so. And I like it, you know, we are only a couple of kind of decades into like the country having money, you know, the tech firms being here, you know, fancy buildings being built. Like, Dublin's still it's a flat city.
Yeah.
It's still relatively old fashioned. It's only now you're kind of getting these modern office blocks and things like that. And I think for true wealth to be created, you go to London, you walk around, like, the money in there, not to sound like a total culture and give away my temporary route here, but you go to London and it's literally like another world.
I'd love to see Ireland in 100 years. Where is that? That's what I always say.
What do you reckon it could be?
Oh, high rise. Has to be.
Yeah, I would think so. I think Dublin is too
flat. With the population explosion and whatnot, and like Nice is nearly Dublin now, you know what I mean? With the urban sprawl, we're going to have to go up.
It's not sustainable.
No.
Like Grand Canal is the only area in the whole city where you got some buildings, and they're not even that high.
Yeah,
I was living in Grand Canal for a while, and I'd see a new building going up, and I'm like, "Oh, brilliant!" And then you'd see it cap out at 10. You're like, "That's bonkers!"
Yeah, yeah.
And yet we're scratching our heads, going, "Oh, the housing crisis. Yeah. What can be done? Go up."
It can be done. The Phoenix Park again. We're going to go on a side here, but the Phoenix Park, they'll be eating into that within X amount of time. I'd imagine. I know there's probably planning restrictions there, but that's only a red pen to knock that off.
But like it's a pure, like it's such an obvious thing. If you keep building at one level flat, you can only put a family of three or four on that patch.
Yeah.
You go up and you put 10 families of four on that patch. Look, I'm not saying apartments are the solution to everything, but like we have to take a more European and a more US centric approach whereby you have to use density. Yeah. There's no other way to build Dublin now without density.
But we see it like in Walford Private, like we do a lot of like with the housing problems. We do a lot of self-administered pensions to give clients clarity and transparency. And we buy a lot of property for our clients in, let's call it the working class areas, the old corporation areas and whatnot. And just the demand for it is unbelievable. Like we do a lot around the hospitals in Crumlin, say. And although there's the people there that are working in the hospitals and whatnot, it's the local people from the areas, it's the people from the hospitals that are like, they're coming in from Mullingar and Longford to work in the Crumlin Hospital. So like, it just doesn't make sense. So and again, with the exodus of landlords as well, it makes it even more difficult, you know?
Are landlords still leaving the market at a rate of knots?
100% because of tax and tenants. Okay, so if you look at it, if you had a rent roll of 24 grand, that's 12 grand, right? Depending on your income. And you might have had a mortgage of 16 grand, right? So you've got a 4 grand negative there, that's 8 grand PAYE rolled up, right? So like 8 grand of your salary is going just to supplement a non-cash flow investment. And then the tenancy problems with the rent pressure zone and the landlord ban, it led to an exodus. But like where we kind of caught a lot of that from the aspect that we basically reverse engineered it from the problem that was there to add value to our clients. So all these properties were coming on stream. There was like a bit of a correction in the price of these areas and whatnot. So what we did was we bought these properties in a way that the accidental landlords never thought of back in the day. So we buy it through retirement accounts in a zero tax environment. So there's no tax on the rent, no tax on the growth. So it's everything you want, right? It basically is the opposite, the reciprocal of the problems that were there with tax and tenants. You have no tax. And then with the tenancy, we could rent them out in a 25-year lease to the government where it was a let and forget. You gave them the key and they look after the maintenance, gave you 80% of the rent. So like there was the exodus, but like if people sit back and like take wealth management advice from whoever it is, there's always opportunity over obligation. So what I say to people is what you want to do, you might be doing it for the wrong reason and the right reason in the wrong way. So always sit back and take advice.
I think that's good for any industry, no matter what you're doing. The money flowing out of residential property. What's happening on commercial? Do you see anything commercial side of things? Like what's happening over that side of things?
I would be the biggest fan of commercial, right?
From an investment point of view?
Yeah, just personally. And again, non-advice, regulated business on Walford. I'm talking as Richie here today and not Walford, right? My background was commercial property investing. So we used to buy like the prime commercial real estate on Oxford Street. So we had the Boots flagship building over there. Their corporate HQ in Berlin, we had the Marmor House, which was Zara's flagship store. All it took was for anything to happen in that parent company for the rent, not to be paid for the landlord sitting there with no cash flow. I prefer the residential stuff because no matter what, if you look at the amount, if we go out there now, you'll see Amazon vans blown around, the Navy ones, like dropping parcels to all the offices. That's totally changed the retail landscape. But what I don't think Amazon's going to be able to do in our lifetime is come up with a pill or a good that will stop us having to sleep. So I always say to clients, I prefer resi over commercial, purely because yes, if someone doesn't pay the rent, there's a process to get them out. But like we deal with professional people, it doesn't mean they won't pay the rent. but we mitigate the risk. Mm. And again, if you take the resi stuff and put it with government schemes, you're in a stronger position.
So parking kind of the Walford stuff and the stuff for founders, what do you see wealthy people investing in? What are the fun things that do? Well, bring us behind the scenes. These are the things people really want to know. What do true wealthy people spend their money on? Give us the sexy stuff as opposed to the good stuff.
It's a great question, right? Because it's not even stuff that we advise them on. It's stuff that emotion makes them invest in.
This is the thing I want to talk about.
So, private jets, we have a lot of clients in that space that they might have, call it a timeshare on a jet. So there's all that stuff, right? Then you've got the helicopter brigade, as we call them, that probably afraid of heights, but like to show off to neighbours. Then we've got the fast car people. So we've a lot of people that are over and back to Tom Hartley, who's hopefully going to speak at the World Summit, the supercar king in the UK. So Ferraris, McLarens, Lamborghinis, all that kind of stuff. Then we've got the guys and girls that love the jewellery. So we've got clients that are buying jewellery down Grafton Street and selling it at 50%, 60% higher. Couple of weeks later because of the shortage and lack of accessibility.
What's driving that? I was listening to a great podcast on Rolex the other day. What's driving that that scarcity and that price?
In my opinion, it's production restrictions and it's just elevating the demand. And
is it artificial or has it been caused by COVID?
I think COVID. Purely because people weren't spending, so they were buying luxury items. They weren't in the pubs and whatnot. They weren't going on holidays. So you can only buy so many log cabins and do the house up so many times. Mm. After that, there's more discretionary expenditure globally. So like if you go into any Rolex shop around the world, it's like plastic watches or dummy watches that are in there. And they shouldn't even have staff. They could have robots now. It's one for the AI. But in simple terms, like watches that are being bought for 80 and 100 grand on the high street are changing hands on the likes of, I don't know if I can mention the names, but there's websites out there like Pride and Pinion, Nico in Belfast, like they basically source watches and whatnot, or else you've got the likes of Chrono 24. Ronaldo has invested in that in the last couple of weeks, whereby a watch that you could buy for 100 grand, they're exchanging on the, if you want to call it the second hand market or the sourcing market, for like 30 and 40% higher a couple of weeks later.
It seems to be booming, like that, and the car market as well seems to be absolutely flying.
So, like, where the car market done well here last year was where people were buying supercars in Ireland, leaving them in the back garden with the L sheet over it under a roof, and the VRT went up like considerably. So there was instant equity in the deal. They knew it was coming. So
is that a Brexit thing?
Look, I'm not an expert in the car industry, but the VRT is a VRT in Ireland. It's like it can be nearly 90% of the car. But on supercars and certain type cars, the price went up again. So it was cheaper to buy and hold one than to bring one in. So there's a lot of people in the luxury end of life were playing in that space and buying multiple cars. And like some of them that we look after would have probably made 500 grand to 700 grand on just buying stuff for a few months and leaving it sitting there.
Jesus.
So it's been in the know in that space. There's a watch stuff. There's the car stuff. There's like, what else are they at? Like the sexy stuff, as you call it.
What's the wildest way you've seen someone spend money? Or try and invest, either one, answer both.
We've had clients buy property recently in Miami, Las Vegas, and they've probably only ever been there once or twice. You know what I mean? Just to say that they had it. The private jet thing for me is probably like where a couple of them have gone that they don't need to go. Like one particular person, it's a husband and wife job. I've seen them on Ryan airplanes and they were very happy on them before, but now a certain level of wealth came from exit and having their first retirement. They said, I fancy a bit of that, and they went for it.
God bless them.
God bless them.
Well, I think we'd all like to find out what that feels like, to be fair.
100% fair play to them.
What's the stupidest way you've seen people spend money?
Probably buying cars.
Ironically.
Yeah,
fast buying cars. the wrong stuff.
Wrong thing at the wrong time. There's the, that. And then just people that were like highly leveraging themselves on different investments and whatnot. And people buying contracts for differences, CFDs. Brought certain families down in this country, as we know, over the years, but they were leveraging against the leverage, if you want to call it. So just like mad stuff. Like,
you do hear strange stories of people working their entire life and then they get the money and then they don't know what to do with it.
Yeah.
I guess that's where you guys step in. But so, it's wild when you see that.
Yeah, but like when what I say to people when they retire is every day is a Saturday, right? Because you're sitting at home, you're not in work, you're not in your business, so you're spending more and more money. So like you're 7 Saturdays every week multiplied by 6 months, and
it's a good way of looking at it, actually. Yeah, yeah.
Literally within 6 months you'll see, like, unless you have passive assets growing in the background, or assets for life as we call them, every day is going to be a negative if the income's not coming in. So look, as you said, like, people don't know what to do. Like, I always say to people, buy cash flow and assets. Assets that produce income, regardless of the direction of the movement to the stock market. I don't like the stock market, even though we have to advise on it for diversification, multi-asset approaches. I just prefer cash flow and assets.
Hmm. That's kind of your strategy overall.
100% cash flow is king. Every business owner and entrepreneur built their business on cash flow, hard work and determination. Why not build their asset bank in the same way rather than the promise to pay through equity plays and whatnot?
It does make sense. Right, we'll get to a rapid fire round. So I hope you're ready for this one. What book could you recommend every entrepreneur must read?
Grant Cardone, 10X Rule.
Straight to the point, I like it. What's something you didn't pay enough attention to early on, but now realize was very important?
Growth. Like that answer to that question, I took too much time thinking about growing. I was in rather than on the business, the old cliche. I'm still in the business. I'm still heavily involved in Walford. I love it. Love meeting the new clients, etc. But we just didn't grow quick enough. Opportunity cost.
I like that. What have you sacrificed to achieve your success?
I'm a night owl, work night and day. I have 2 young kids. Everything goes ahead of me. I'd like to take more time for the kids. So I literally would like to spend more time there, if you want to, in that space, over the next 20 years.
Okay. What would you do if I give you 10 million euro today?
Cash flow and assets. Has to be.
Everyone gives the same answer. Oh, the best in my company, or the best in the thing they do.
Wouldn't invest in my company.
Cash flow and assets. Okay.
Yeah, we do a lot in the pharmaceutical space. So we have people that would earn their bread in the pharmacy space, but they'd reinvest their money back into the wholesalers, back into the drug companies. And I'm like, talk about all the eggs in one basket. Mm. So you never invest in your own business only to retain the earnings on your upfront equity. You need to start looking at other things. If you are in that position that you want to grow other companies, you really, really need to step outside your world and go elsewhere.
What's something you do in your daily routine you'd wish you'd done sooner, or for you, something you would like to implement now?
Growth.
Into your daily routine.
Addiction.
I'm going to give you 1 million euro, but you can only invest it in one company or person. Who would it be? Obviously, you can't give financial advice, but where would you put it in a broader sense?
I would diversify. I'd never, ever, ever, we've seen the mistakes of 07, 08. So it would diversify, and I'd have a large chunk of change in the AI space.
Okay, so you'd break it apart. If you just start a brand new company in the morning, what would it do?
Add value.
What do you believe that other people find strange or strongly disagree with?
It's a tough question.
I would have thought you would have had a lot here.
Yeah, I have, but I don't want to sound like a negative Nelly. A lot of people are begrudging, as I said, you see it, begrudging to entrepreneurs. And without entrepreneurs, there's no real economy, because they're the ones that provide the jobs, they're the ones that provide the innovation, the scale, provide the taxes. It all comes from, no matter what we're doing in this country, right? Entrepreneurs are the people who support the economy, and they should get more credit. Not a vanity parade, but they shouldn't get the bad press.
What's one thing you spend money on your life that brings you massive happiness?
Going to conferences. As sad as it sounds, I'm going off. I was in Nashville a couple of weeks ago, at the $1 million round table. It's be careful what I say here. It's seen as the lead association of finance professionals, and there's multiple levels of it. We're at the top of the table level, so. I had the opportunity to speak in front of 14,000 people in Orlando a couple of years ago. So my holidays, if you want to call it, is going to these places. I absolutely love it.
I respect that. What is your one bit of advice for every entrepreneur or founder listening?
Never say no.
Richie, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for coming on. Before you go, tell me where people can learn more about The Wealth Summit.
TheWealthSummit.ie. All the information is there. You're probably getting blasted out of it on socials. And if you're not, I apologise. Our marketing team aren't doing their job correctly, even though they're brilliant. We've avatars built out there for business owners and entrepreneurs all over the web. So we're probably annoying you if we are. I'm not sorry. We'll probably do it for the next 3 or 4 months because we know we can add value to you. We have some different ticket levels and whatnot there. We've got the Wealth Tribe. It's a recurring income model for us because it allows us to put best in class speakers on. So we've Stephen Bartlett coming, Mandy Hicks in, Mike Green, Niall Quinn, Suzanne Jackson, who already spoke in May, but we've Piers Linney from the Dragon's Den. We've got best in class speakers globally. And we've also got a couple of absolute belters lined up for the May event. I've told you who they are, so we're saying nothing more.
They are big. I'm excited.
Yeah, we're at contract stage there.
And people, we'll have done a special offer. So people will have heard at the very start of this episode, we'll have put in a special offer so they can go and claim that and get their unique entrepreneur experience.
And what I'd like to, offer. Because I'm so passionate about AI, we're doing a workshop on the 16th of November in RDS land, hopefully, in around that week, where the main event is. So it's a day after the Wealth Summit, and we have a 5-6 hour workshop there with Piers Linney and Alec. And anybody who comes in through just buying normal tickets for the Wealth Summit, we'll have an offer. It'd be very affordable. We'll get, because they've come through yourselves here on the pod, they will get that as a bonus.
Brilliant. Richie, thank you so much. It was an absolute pleasure.
Okay, thank you for having us.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed my chat with Richie. Wherever you're listening, whether it's on Spotify, Apple or YouTube, hit the subscribe button. It really helps the podcast to grow. You can join my free weekly newsletter, which goes out every single Sunday. You can join that at mrgaryfox.com. I'll see you back here in a couple of days for a brand new episode.